Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Haunted Playground right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. We're at liveparanormal.com and syndicated all over the world on all of our syndicates, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Podomatic, Blog Talk Radio, just to name a few. And please check us out at any of those affiliates. I love being a part of the Live Paranormal family. Also really loving being a part of the Blog Talk Radio family. I'm Tina Metal. I'm a 27-year talk radio host. I'm also a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. I'm all kinds of things, an artist and performing artist. Haunted Playground is 11 years old. This is our first year joining Live Paranormal. Everything shifted when COVID hit, and this is one of my really fantastic blessings. We're here every Wednesday at 6 o'clock Pacific time at hauntedplayground.com. I'm at sheenametalspiritual.com. You can learn a lot about me there. Also, Tuesdays at 5 o'clock, I host Raising the Vibration here. That's a show about what are you doing to make the world a better place. It's an outreach of my raisingthevibration.org movement of peace, love, kindness, and unity. And here at the Playground, I gather some cool people that either the paranormal or the spiritual world have touched in some way. A lot of my friends from the entertainment world, a lot of my friends from the spiritual world, and we talk about all things that you can imagine. And my guest today is coming back and has done my radio shows many, many times, and such an honor to have her here. She's a brilliant performing artist, a wonderful actor and writer and more, and is loved for so many things, including her fantastic stint on the American Horror Story series, where she plays Pepper the Pinhead, and a new character on Hulu's American Horror Stories that I just said. If you know, most people like go, I think about my friend, and then I text them. I see my friends like on TV, or I hear their songs, and I'm like, oh, now I'm thinking about my friend. It's actually quite a wonderful way to stay in touch with people, and it's an honor and a pleasure to have Naomi Grossman here. How are you, my friend? It's wonderful to hear your voice and how you hold it up post-COVID.
Oh, man. Is it post-COVID?
I was just...
I'm ready for...
I was just...
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's... Is it not? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't have an answer to that. It doesn't feel... They say it is, but it doesn't feel like it is. And they tell us now that we can go anywhere and do anything. But it seems to me, I don't know if you've noticed this, that people are just different now. I mean, I think staying home for a year and a half has really affected people have lost a lot of their socializing muscle, right? It's a muscle that you have to build up to be around other people, especially performers, because we tend to be introverts, right?
I can't say that. I'm not an introvert. There's not a single cell of me that's an introvert. But I do agree that we are changed. I mean, I used to have such FOMO all the time. You know, I couldn't miss a party, and now I'm like, meh. You know, I missed the 18 months. Like, I'll pass. So that, which is weird.
Yeah.
Like, the old Naomi would never pass on a party. But I don't know. It's weird.
I'm what they call an extroverted introvert, which means by my core I'm an introvert, but my lifetime entertainment, I've taught myself to be an extrovert because you kind of have to get out there and meet people and be in it. And I actually love being around people now, but I'm like you, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a time when I would schedule 5 or 6 events in a day, leave the house at 10 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
come back at midnight, and do it all over again the
mm-hmm.
next day. And now I stop and think, do I really want to go stack that many parties up in a day? So, I mean, I think that it's been a great time to think about a lot of things in our life and what's important and what we really want and what means a lot to us. And that's been my experience. I mean, what has it done for you as a person, as an artist? You know, how are you different?
Yeah. Yes, going out and leaving at 10 a.m. and home at midnight, that was, I loved that. That was just my jam. And it really required an international pandemic to change that. Like, it wasn't, you know, there was nothing short of like a federal law to keep me home. was it. You know what I mean? It required the entire world saying, no, Naomi, there's nowhere to go to keep me home.
Right.
Now that I've been home, I'm kind of like, I don't know. I kind of feel like, are those parties really all that great? Really? Like, I guess I feel like we were so spoiled. So many of those parties really were all that. And now that the fancy parties with the, you know, open bars passing around, you know, expensive hors d'oeuvres are done, you know, now that I'm having to wear a mask in a, you know, a parking lot, this quote unquote a restaurant, and you know, pay for the food, it's a little less appealing. I mean, that was my habit before. This is my habit now. And, I hate to think I'd lost all my social skills. I mean, that was really one of my superpowers. I know what you mean about introverted extroverts and vice versa. I think I'm 100% far left, you know, extrovert. I think I get my energy from people. I think I feel like if no one's watching, what's the point? Like, if I don't have an audience, then why even get out of bed, you know? And so that's why this was especially just a mind F on me and many, most of us, it's the people who say, oh, I really thrived, that I just want to punch in the face. Although I will say I did get some out of it. Like, I did manage to, once I convinced myself not to drown in my pool and, you know what I mean? Like, once I'd chosen life, I went ahead and got busy, and I wrote a third one-woman show, and I did some things that I can be really proud of, and that in that regard, I feel like, wow, 2020 really gave me something. Like, I actually have something to show for it, other than like a, COVID-19 pounds or whatever it is that, a lot of people are have to boast. So, I think it wasn't bad. Like, this one-woman show was not going to get written with me going to all those parties between 10 a.m. and midnight. So in that regard, like, God bless it. You know, I'm glad I finally hunkered down and made this thing happen. I'd been talking about it for a while, and it was just – it required going through my entire to-do list, alphabetizing my junk drawer before I finally went ahead and went, okay, I'll do what I got to do, and I did it. So, I'm proud of myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it is nice as a writer, right, to have that uninterrupted time. I mean, that is a nice thing as a writer. I know that, like, when I go certain places, like a couple of years ago, I was in the historic Savannah, the old 1600s part of Savannah, and I thought, oh, I'd love to get a room here for like a month and write a book. Like, or when I'm in Catalina, I'm always like, I can get a room here for a month and write a book. Because I think sometimes when you're writing, which is why my book never gets written, is you have to be in a place where you have a little time to yourself to kind of live in the zone And it's so hard when you're out all the time.
Right. I feel like as a writer, I make so many excuses. And, you know, if I'm like, oh, well, you know, it's 9 a.m. and I'm, you know, I'm going to yoga at 1 p.m., you know, what am I going to get done in 5 hours? And, you know, the fact is a lot of things can get done, but, you know, we create any kind of excuse we can get. And at this point, I had none. Like, there was nowhere to go. So, I made it happen. I made it happen in 5-hour increments, in 1-hour increment, in 24-hour increments. I mean, you name it. Like, I had no schedule. I was writing till 4 a.m. It was whenever the inspiration struck, because, you know, there was nothing else to do. So, yeah, there's a show that I saw that I really it was going to be a great time capsule for us. It's called Inside. It's Bo Burnham's one-man show that he wrote, directed, shot, edited. He did all of it. And as jealous as I am that I didn't also manage to, you know, shoot and direct and edit and sell it to Netflix in this last year as well, I think it reminds me a lot of actually my own experience of, you know, just hunkering down and getting creative and passing this time however I, you know, possibly can.
Yeah. So important.
So
yeah.
That would be my wrap.
Now, have you been on a set since COVID? Because some people have, some people haven't.
Yes.
I know it's much different, right? Because when I was watching American Horror Stories, I was thinking, well, if it just came out, did they shoot it like a year ago? So did that happen during COVID? And what is the difference in being on a set now compared to what it was like before COVID?
Yeah, no, that Horror Stories shot in April, May. I'm sure some of it was shot in March and some of it was shot in June, but I was involved in April,
right.
May. I would, you know, we got tested every day we worked. There was, you know, there was a testing facility on site, and also, you know, every 3 days, you know, anytime you had any kind of appointment, whether it was a, you know, makeup test or a fitting, we got a test. So it was, you know, I probably in the 2 weeks I worked, I probably got 10 tests. I mean, it was just insane.
Wow.
It's wild. Like you know, when they call last looks, that's the moment that the, you know, COVID compliant officer or whatever he is runs around and takes off your mask or puts your mask back on. Like, it was the second that slate clapped, it was you know, mask off. There was not a moment. I mean, and we're talking even, and I didn't have any intimate scenes, but even the scenes where people were making out, they were still wearing a mask. When they didn't have their tongues in each other's mouths, they had their masks on. So it was, people were not messing around. That's why I was surprised to hear there was some sort of story about how American Horror Story, the OG show, got shut down briefly because an actor caught COVID. Yeah, that goes to show just how contagious this evidently is, because, I mean, it was not for lack of precaution. Let's just say that. It was an unbelievably tight ship as far as that was concerned.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a friend working on a Ryan Murphy project in, I think she did the show in January or February. She did one of my shows, and she was talking about what it was like to be on the set then. I mean, it was literally like you shot and then they took you back to your dresser or a cubicle and you stayed there. And then your, you know, craft service is now they bring you a box of something to eat. And I mean, I think it's amazing that sets are being so careful and conscientious and awake and aware, and kudos to them. And it seems like Ryan Murphy's always sort of at the front of that pack of, you know, whatever is going on that should be now and humane and conscientious. Those folks seem to be there. But from an artist perspective, and it's COVID, so we can't do anything about it, being able to touch and hug people and see them, and that's the fun of being on a set, right? I mean, that's a lot of the fun of being on a set is the camaraderie. And I think that COVID is, we've had to learn how to have that camaraderie in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're right. Like, it's so fun to, you know, wander over to the craft food table and, kind of graze, and that's your chance to stick your hands in the licorice and decide which of the I mean, that's fun. It's a kid in a candy shop, and we don't have that anymore. It's place your order and they hand you a Twizzler, period, and it's it's wrapped and sealed, and they deliver it in a hazmat suit.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm glad I got my time in the to graze, because I do feel like that's over, for now anyway.
I worry about that too. I fear I will never go to another salad bar. I think that maybe the end of the salad bar is come. Yeah. It's sad when you drive by all the hometown buffets and things, they're all shut down. And, because I think that human beings love grazing, right? We love the choices. And, there's no more if they're the olive bar at the grocery store is gone. And, there's no more the age of grazing.
Yes. Oh,
is
the
done.
Sample lady. Yeah.
Right. She's
you're
done.
Right.
Yeah. If that was your job,
what is she
we're
doing
done.
Now? But, she's sitting at home in her hairnet, like just crying into her empty tray of samples.
Collecting her COVID unemployment. But so let's talk about another thing. While we're talking about that, is conventions and conferences. You did a lot of those, right? So how is that now?
Well, that is slowly coming back, and it's interesting. It tends to be the redder states with the more the angrier the governor, the more likely there is to be a con, and the more likely there is for me to be there. It's interesting. One of the Texas cons that I had lined up has just canceled. But other than that, I just keep going back to Texas. I'm big in Texas. What can I say? I guess everything is. But I'll be back in Texas next weekend for yet another con. I think. It's just such a big state that it's very easy to just go back there every weekend and see a whole nother, slew of people. I mean, it's definitely that is also different and changed. It kind of depends on the area as to whether or not you're wearing masks or not. And it's also up to us as the guests as to whether or not we're comfortable with hugs and all of that. I would say in general, I find people are dying to meet me in a whole nother level. They've been denied for all this time. They're very anxious to spend money. It's a good time to be an actor, on that circuit. This is a good time to be there. Unfortunately, it's not what it was in terms of, it used to be every weekend, and it's not anymore for obvious reasons. But when we do have a weekend, boy, it's a good one. I haven't come away without having, made my money in a long, long time. So that's great.
And isn't that amazing? And I know we've talked about this when you've been on shows with me before, but isn't it amazing that when you're like 90, that will still be the case?
Which is so
you could be sitting at a table at 90 and people coming up to hug Pepper, and isn't that, I think that is so beautiful and so fascinating.
It is. It's, yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, there was a point when, I did not even know these things existed until I was suddenly thrust into the epicenter of them. So, I would say, I mean, I remember when I first kind of got into this, I was like, please don't let me be that, like, you know, 90-year-old still signing pictures of Pepper. But that fear was only because I wanted to make sure that Pepper, you know, that I'd done something between that time and when I was 90. Like, I want to know that there's more to me than just this little pinhead person, who is amazing, and I love her, and she's
right.
She's so beloved that I, you know, there could be worse things, but at the same time, I want to believe, you know, I'm still in my prime here, so I'd like to believe that there's more,
right.
There's more ahead for me. And I think that was my fear. Like, you know, sometimes at these cons, I'll see people who are signing pictures from, bazillions of years ago, and they haven't necessarily done anything since. And that, I think that's my fear. I that's what I
right.
don't want. And so I'm, you know, working
right.
hard to make it not happen. That said,
sure.
it's hard to, you know, that a character like her comes only ever so often, and they're not going to,
yeah.
every character is not going to be a Pepper, you know what I mean? So,
right.
you know,
right.
there's going to be some stinkers in the meantime, I'm sure.
Sure. Well, and just some bland, just playing maybe some bland regular ladies that don't wind up being convention hits until the end of time. You know, just like playing regular
right.
chicks.
Of course.
I mean, that,
yes.
There's
is not
too.
Something I do real well.
Yeah, you and
I
me
tend
both.
To be pretty spicy
yeah.
no matter what I do. But yes, I agree. There is, you know, Pepper was a whole took spicy to a whole nother level.
Yeah.
And yeah,
yeah,
just some ladies
and
with my own face. Yeah.
Right, right. And it's, you know, it's, and I will say that for the folks that are still signing the autographs for the one thing they did in 1965, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how fantastic for them, right? That that's an
yeah.
option, and that to know that what you did really matters. You know, I have a friend that was in a big band in the 80s, a regular guest, and he did my show once, and he was talking about how when they did their first run, they didn't know how successful they were because the record company kept all their fan mail. They knew what kind of money they
mm-hmm.
were making, but they never really knew what people thought about them. Because the record company controlled
wow.
everything. And then how nice it was when the internet came and they could really see how the fans felt about them and hear what the fans thought and how the songs changed their lives. And this one was at my wedding and this one was at my funeral and this one I played to my mom when she was sick and how that really, you know what I mean? So we're so lucky to be
yeah.
living in a time where you can just go on the internet and see how beloved you are by people. To know that what you're doing
That's
is
true.
Really making a difference, because isn't that the reason we all got into this in the first place, was to entertain people and make them happy or make them feel something.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean that's the theater, you know, getting that instant reaction back, you know, the applause, the laughter. I mean, that is like a drug for us performers. And you're right. Like, there's a whole generation of film and TV actors who have been acting to this kind of quiet audience, people that didn't have necessarily an outlet to, you know, other than Nielsen ratings, to express their adoration for a show. And now that we have, you know, social media and we have, like, direct access, like, they can speak to me and I can speak back. And it's really, you're right. I'm very lucky in that regard.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. And I think it's something that, you know, like you said, it's the people waiting outside the stage door after a play, right? It's something that
yeah.
some of the TV actors were really missing. And also the idea of doing
mm-hmm.
their own thing. I remember one of my regular guests before he passed, whom I love, was Richard Hatch. And he was talking to me once about how after he finished Battlestar Galactica, because, you know, back then, you probably know this, the idea was once you finished a show, the agent sort of put you on the shelf for a while, because the idea was an audience wasn't ready to accept you as someone else until they had forgotten about that show. So that was always a really tough time for actors. And he said, you know, all those times I sat around my pool, nobody ever told me I could have been creating projects for myself. But in the theater, you just do, right? If you're not working, you write a play and you do your own thing. But there was a very, like, it was very frowned upon in film and television that you could create your own stuff. And now it's encouraged, right? So actors know they don't have to sit around anymore. They can find work in between the big work.
Right, absolutely.
Or they can go sit at conventions and be loved by people, which...
Oh, it's so great.
Isn't it great? Yeah. So tell me why is it that, because I was just, I just did a documentary a couple of weeks ago in Joshua Tree, and a couple of the folks involved in it are kind of like paranormal celebrities, so they do all the paranormal conferences. What is it about paranormal and horror fans, right? They're just the coolest people in the world. I mean, something about... Loving the scary, gory stuff, right? And they are the sweetest, gentle, most wonderful people in the world.
It's true. It's so weird. You know, I don't know a more sort of rabid, just like hungry fan than a horror fan, for sure. I mean, and they are, yes, they are so lovely, and my goodness, and here they are, you know, covered in blood, or, you know, these like slasher scenes on their t-shirts, or,
right?
You know,
uh-huh.
And yet the nicest people. It's that juxtaposition is just hilarious to me.
They're so loyal,
my goodness.
Yeah,
what's that?
Yes, they love their love their horror projects, like they love their stuff.
Yes, to the end. They are, so, you know, I have, like you, so many friends in the business, and when they come over and they see my little, like, pepper room with, you know, just wall-to-wall fan art, they're like, what in the world? Like, I was a year for years on, you know, I don't have a painting of myself. And it's because they were, like, on a procedural drama or a sitcom, or, you know, I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, you needed to be in some genre shit, period.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's completely all about that, right? It's really, it's really fantastic and amazing, I believe, that, this little genre, right, that used to be, because I've loved horror since I was a kid, used to be you'd wait till Halloween week for the one or two things to come out. And right around Halloween, like, you know, a book would come out and a movie would come out and maybe a TV show thing would come out, or whatever the talk show was of the day, they would have a ghost segment on it. And I was so excited. Now it's like 50 projects come out a day. I look on the streaming platforms, and I can't believe how many movies there are and TV shows, and it's everywhere. Yet the horror people are still so loving and dedicated, like they're still waiting for that one thing to come out every year. It's like time has stood still. And
it's
true.
That's
really so
interesting.
Cool.
Yeah,
which is
I wasn't aware of horror in this way until I was in it. Like, it was never really kind of on my radar, but now it's hard for me to distinguish whether or not it's because I'm in it that I'm seeing it all the time, or that it's always been there. And, you know, am I seeing it only now that I'm in it, or has it become very popular recently? I'm not sure.
Right.
You know, I don't know.
Right.
My dad is an artist, and I was giving him some advice. You know, he's on, you know, he may be 82, but he's still on Instagram. And he's like,
nice.
You know, he wants to get some more garnish some more, you know, likes and followers. And I told him, I was like, well, have you thought of painting Pepper? Like, honestly, I mean, not only will I share it, which you'll get some more eyeballs on it, but there's a whole rabid fan base of people that are just following the hashtag, you know, horror or fan art or, you know, Pepper. And whereas, like, I'm sorry, but your, you know, hashtag Adobe building or, you know, hashtag Southwest landscape doesn't have the same sort of, like, just ardent, rabid following. And it's just a fact. So,
I think he should hashtag Pepper's dad.
yes, I agree.
I think he would get a ton of followers if he hashtag Pepper's dad.
You're probably right.
Because there are fans that want to follow friends and family of people. Do you know what I mean? Like
Anthony Anderson's mom.
Yes.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's many moms and dads out there. It's true. The Rock.
Yeah, and everybody, you know, the week that I started dating my girlfriend, she was like, who are all these people on Facebook? And I was like, oh, sorry. You know, because it's true. When people want to be near you, they want to be near everybody that you know. And so, yeah, I think your dad could seriously, pretty soon he'll start getting commissions like, could you paint Pepper for me?
You might be right. You might be right. And, you know, as much as he embraces my success, I think, you know, the resemblance is not, you know, between he and Pepper is not great. And I think he just is going to keep it that way. So,
of course. Yes, probably true. Yes, of course. It's so interesting how much people love her. Whenever I'm, you know, watching anything, I was just recently with my girlfriend and her daughter watching American Horror Stories because her daughter's 18. And so the idea is American Horror Stories is sort of like the OG, but sort of a little more geared towards people of that generation, like the younger generation, right? And it's such a great show,
too. For sure, yeah.
And there you were, and I was like, oh, that's my buddy Naomi, and, you know, she's Pepper. I mean, as soon as you say Pepper, it's like the floodgate of love opens. It's like on Facebook when people send you hearts and they explode everywhere. There's something about saying Pepper that everybody gets this kind of wistful look in their eye like you just saw a puppy.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's so true. It's funny because, you know, little Jyoti, who played Ma Petite, she was she's the smallest woman in the world. She gets that all the time, but, like, as herself. You know, there's not a single person on the planet who doesn't look at her and their eyes kind of glass over and turn into heart shapes. And you know, their heart, like, plunges, you know, flies out of their body like in some sort of Warner Brothers cartoon.
Yes.
I mean, she just makes you melt. And it honestly, like, annoys her. She's like, don't call me cute. And it's like, oh, my God. Like, say that again. It was so cute. You know, whereas in my case, like, it really is a character. Like, I don't get that in life. People don't, like, swoon when they necessarily meet me. But, yes, the minute the minute I say Pepper, then boom, it's like it's amazing how differently people treat you based on the way you look and the way you act. In a way, it's a little upsetting. Like, I believe people when they talk about, Black Lives Matter or any sort of, like, marginalized group, when they say, you know, we are treated differently by the police. I believe it. I just see how differently I'm treated even by the cast and crew when I'm Pepper versus when I'm, Rabid Root. So I believe it. I get it. Yeah. People are –
Oh, that's fascinating. So people – people on the set actually treated you differently when you're in the Pepper outfit and the makeup.
Absolutely. I mean,
wow.
Yes, and it also, I mean, I perpetuated that in that, you know, I tend to be, I mean, I'm not full on method. It's not like I can't drop it between takes, but it is easier to just sort of stay in character. Like, I tend to be one of those people who, it's kind of like when you put on a wig, like a long, well, you already have beautiful long dark hair, but like I don't. So when I put on a long dark wig, I turn into Sofia Vergara. Period. Like, that's just, I become this, like, glamorous Colombian, you know, glamour puss. Same thing with the Pepper. Like, the minute the fat suit went on and the prosthetics got glued, I went there. And, yes, people perceive that as cute and perceive that as funny and playful and I definitely had crew members asking to, you know, pull my finger and, you know, the kind of things that you, things you do when you're with a small child or a dog or, you know, like someone that they can, you know, play with. Whereas, you know, I remember when Pepper was abducted by aliens and returned and, you know, suddenly I had, you know, monologues to perform and I, you know, really kind of needed to have my wits about me, all of a sudden people were like, whoa, you changed. You're not so fun. And I was like, well, no, I'm here to do a job. Like, I'm not here to entertain you. Like, give me a break. I've got a speech to do. Okay. If you will, like, pardon me. So yeah, I do believe that it's,
right.
It's interesting how people really do treat you differently. Yep.
Yeah, well, I think it's true. I mean, when you're, you know, I'm a bigger person. I've been fat my whole life since I was 5. I say the word fat, and I'm not ashamed to say that. It's not a bad word to me. But people treat me differently depending on where I'm at on the fat spectrum.
Oh, my gosh.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting.
That
and
is
crazy. As thin people get nicer the smaller you get, sometimes bigger people get meaner. I remember once I'd gone through a thing and I'd lost a lot of weight. I was in my late 20s and I'd lost a lot of weight. And I was almost small enough that I didn't have to shop at like the Lane Bryant anymore. But I was so used to going there. I went in there one day and nobody would wait. Nobody would help me. Nobody would like wait on me. None of the service, they were all like, all the girls that worked there, they were all like snubbed me, and I'm like, what's going on? I'm in here all the time. And I thought, oh, that's right. We don't like skinny. So, yeah, I think definitely people.
Right.
I mean, I have friends that are African-American that have told me that people are sometimes weirder or nicer to you depending on what your skin tone is, how, you know, how dark you
yes.
are, how light you are. We really need to get past that as people. But,
yes.
you know, I think that's one of the nice things about sci-fi and horror and fantasy as genres is that, you know, like on Star Trek, nobody's being racially profiled for being a Klingon, you know?
You're a purple person.
I think it's
sort of.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right, exactly. It levels the playing field, I think, a lot, and it makes us think about a world where we don't care what anybody looks like.
Yeah.
And
wow.
We need that.
It's true.
Really
I have an African-American friend who just had a bunch of surgery. He's got now like these light blue lenses. And people apparently he's the before he couldn't get a date. Now he's like this exotic, like, where are you from? Like all the ladies love him. Like it's so weird to me how we would treat each other differently because of some blue contacts. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I know.
Well,
I know.
Experience actually where I was on vacation just recently with my dad, and they would serve me these itty bitty portions like I don't eat, and you know, I am a little, I'm a petite person, but, like, I still have to eat. Like, I still have an appetite. You know, I just metabolize faster, you know, like, but gee whiz, like, it's like they were trying to starve me. Like, come on. Like, it's not fair.
Wow.
Like, yeah.
You were, like, small shamed.
Yeah, I kind of
was.
Terrible. Yes. No, my portions were half the size of my stepbrother, like, for no reason other than the fact that he is, you know, twice my size, so he gets more.
That's
which,
weird. I didn't even know that was a thing. I just assumed when you went to a restaurant, all the portions were the same. I didn't even know that was a thing.
I know. I mean, are they back in the kitchen, like, eyeballing us, deciding – oh, well, she gets the little one or he gets the, you know, no. Like, that's not fair. My 12-ounce steak should be the same 12-ounce steak as you give the next guy. 12 ounces
right.
is 12 ounces,
maybe they
damn
figured,
it.
You know that little steak that we didn't know who we were going to give, the leftover piece we didn't know who we were going to give it to? Well, this little girl won't mind.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But she does mind, darn it. She's watching.
Yep.
Don't think she doesn't notice.
I think you need to start a movement for actresses that eat.
Yes.
You know, because everyone
yes.
always assumes that actresses don't eat. So when there's going to be a party with a bunch of actresses, there's just no food. And sometimes girls
no,
are like, but
true.
Wait a minute, I eat. You know?
Yes. No, it's true. It's true. Yeah. That's hilarious. I love it.
People think, well, actresses are coming over. I don't have to provide any food.
Yeah. Well, don't get me wrong. I have actually said that. I'm not a cook myself at all. I am very social and I like entertaining, but, you know, I just really like stocking my fridge with wine and beer. Like I'm not, but I hope you're not coming to eat. Like, definitely eat before you come because you will starve over here. And, yeah, so I think I said that even. I think I said, well, nobody's going to be hungry because they know it's me. Like, they know I'm an actress, so they're not going to expect, you know, to eat here,
right.
Which is, of course, terrible. I'm perpetuating the stereotype, which is just not true. We do eat. We should eat.
Right.
Yes, people
right.
need to eat.
Well, and perpetuating the stereotype that come just to drink. There's that stereotype too.
Right. Right. Yes. Yes. Exactly.
That actors are just that we just sit around all day long and drink and don't eat.
I mean, don't get me wrong. If I have to choose my calories, that's probably where I'll choose them. But no, I am an actress that eats. You know, I really that's important. Yeah. In fact, my whole thing is I think this is like a weird just quirk of mine. I like to scavenge, so I prefer food other people have ordered. Like, I am much more excited by the leftovers of your dinner than whatever I ordered, for whatever reason. It's like a joke with me and my friends. Like, you know, there'll be some pizza crust on the table next to us, and they're like, you know you want that, Naomi, you know. And I'm like, yes, I do. I really want that pizza. I want that crust. Like, that is so weird and disgusting, but I don't know. I don't know what that is. There's some sort of thrill, I'm sure, in it all.
But maybe
I don't think I've ever.
So that just makes me. What?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever admitted that to anyone, and I don't know what the genesis of that is, other than the fact that my mom did not eat when she was pregnant. It's not that she was, you know. Anorexic, but she just she is a tiny woman with a little pea-sized stomach, and So, you know, I think she didn't eat before. She hasn't eaten since. And she didn't take the time, you know, she didn't feel the need to eat for two. She barely has the need to eat for one. So I think I am still, like, just trying to get my nutrients, you know. And if it comes from other people's plates, then so be it. I'll get
That's
it
fantastic.
Wherever I can.
That is absolutely fantastic. Maybe that's a little bit of where your FOMO came from too. That you're worried that you know, I'm going to miss out on something. And there might be a pizza crust. I can't miss this event.
There might be. That's right. I'm sure there's food there. Darn it.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's hilarious.
Not anymore, though. Right now, there's just a prepackaged Twizzler. Well, now I even feel worse for you that there's not craft service now. Because it feels like that was really your thing. Did you ever take anything home from the craft service table?
Oh, yeah. In fact, there's a story that has been terribly distorted since I first told it. It dates back to when I was doing Asylum, and I went to craft services after I, was wrapped. I was out of the pepper hair and makeup, and I was, you know, grazing like you do. I had a long drive home from the Santa Ana courthouse, which was Briarcliff, and that's when one of the security stopped me and said, "Ma'am, you know, this is only for cast and crew." I guess he just thought I was some lady wandering around Santa Ana off the street. And, you know, like I said, the fan sites have twisted it. Like, you know, Pepper is kicked on set. You know, it wasn't all that. But it was kind of this humiliating moment where having to explain to someone, like, I am Cass. Like, we just had a conversation, but you don't recognize me. I think you might be right. I think this is why I'm so kind of blasé about going back to parties, because I know the parties are only – they're not going to serve hors d'oeuvres. If they serve anything, it's going to be some prepackaged thing, and I just don't want that. Like, I really want somebody else's food off of their plate, you know. And hopefully someone totally anonymous that I've never even met. That sounds even more exciting to me, which is even more, you know, dangerous and weird. That's probably why.
It's kind of
That's
fantastic.
Probably why.
You're kind of you're kind of a little bit of a like a dangerous voyeuristic thing to you about leftovers.
It's true. It's totally true. Again, it's amazing that we're only just now talking about this, because I've never talked about it with anyone. It's just this inside joke with me and my friends. Like, anytime anyone sees food out in the wild, they're like, "Oh, Naomi will eat it," you know. And it's true. I find a candy bar on the street, of course I'm going to eat it. I mean, it's in a wrapper. But yes, there is. There's definitely something like dangerous and sort of feral about it.
I love it. You know, there's something about waste. Like, I don't like waste. Like, when people eat one thing off their plate and then they're just going to throw it out, I'm like, "Can't you take it home?" They're like, "But I'm never going to eat it." And I'm like, "Isn't there somebody you know who wants that? Like, can you drop it off with a homeless person? Or do you have, like,
of course,
starving actor friend that wants it? I mean, why did you order a $40
steak
and take one bite and you're going to throw it away?" Exactly. That's what – you need to get, like, a P.O. box with a refrigerator in it where people can send you refrigerated leftovers and you can go pick them up once a week.
Oh, my God. Well, now you have a name. Now it's not just like, "Don't you have a friend?" You can say, "Well, I have a friend." So –
I know who you need to give your leftovers to. Now, don't you think it's weird being like that? People that won't, like, some people freak out. Like, they won't give you their pizza crust because they don't want you to touch their food, even though they're never going to touch it again. It's like a weird thing about germs and sharing.
Yeah. I wonder what that is. Why do they care?
It's probably gotten worse because of COVID now. Now people will use COVID as the excuse, but I don't know. Some people are just very strange about, like, you know, like I've dated people who were like, but I don't want to share a fork. And I'm like, you do know that, like, the inside of our mouths touch, right? Like, what? What, really? You're worried about, like, using the same spoon? You, it's such a strange thing to me. But it is a thing, right? I mean, people are weird
true.
Like that.
Yeah. You know, in my first solo show, which is set in Argentina, I serve the audience a drink called mate, which is essentially some herbs that are in a gourd, and you pour hot water in, and it basically sort of steeps, and it's a tea. But the whole idea is it's not just making tea; it's an experience. It's the shared sort of experience of. You know, I pour in some hot water, I give it to you. You give it back when you're done. I pour it in and give it to, you know, the next person. And it goes around in a circle like this. And it's a ritual. It's something that people do at, you know, 4 or 5 p.m. when you need a little pick-me-up and you're in Uruguay, Argentina. This is what's done. And we did it in my show. And I think about that now, like, that would not fly right now. In fact, I don't even know if people in Argentina are doing that right now. You know, like, they're definitely not doing with people not in their households, which is so crazy because, you know, I spent a whole year doing exactly that. You know, that was my senior year of high school. So it's weird how even, you know, traditions deep in certain cultures are forever changed. Or at least temporarily, you know.
Right?
Maybe, hopefully not
now,
forever.
What is,
I don't know.
What is your connection? I hope so, too. What is your connection to Argentina?
So I was an exchange student there in high school. I lived there for a year. And totally coincidentally, after my dad bought a motorcycle and terminated his 44-year marriage to my mom, he moved there.
Wow.
You know, father just following in his daughter's footsteps, like you do. No, it made no sense. But it's funny. My parents were original Peace Corps volunteers. They were the very first ones in, you know, 1960. They were in Colombia, and consequently, my dad speaks Spanish like a newscaster. I mean, he has got the most pure, really clean, beautiful Spanish. My mom, alternatively, is from Texas, so she sounds like George Bush speaking Spanish. And then, of course, I came way past the Peace Corps days, you know, and like I said, my Spanish is very distinctively Argentine. And I also happen to speak, I'm very cool in 1997. People always mention that. They're like, wow, your slang is like spot on late 90s. Like, you're so cool then. Not so much now. But, yeah, so anyway, like I said, they're divorced now, but when we were a unit, we were such a weird group. Like, no one, people were like, how are you connected? Like, how, oh, that's my mom, that's my dad. It's funny. So that's the connection. And he lives primarily in Uruguay, which is just kind of across the way from Argentina. He also maintains an apartment in Buenos Aires. So it's cool. I still have, like, you know, that's where I go home to, really, if I want to visit my dad anyway. So,
well, and isn't there a weird
kind of
story? Didn't you tell me a weird story right after you did American Horror Story, the first Asylum season? Weren't some of your first big Pepper fans there?
There is definitely a huge fan base, for sure. I don't know if
isn't
I have a weird story. But yes, Brazil.
But isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Right. That South America, I guess that's the weird story, is that the South American stuff keeps coming up for you over and over again. I mean, it's that whole, there are no accidents, right?
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure, like, because I speak Spanish and Portuguese, for that matter, I'm probably stirring that up. Subconsciously, I'll tweet in Portuguese, and that, you know, then the internet breaks in Brazil.
Right.
You know, so it is, you know, I'm doing my part, I'm sure.
That's fantastic.
But I agree about no accidents.
Yeah, no accidents. I can't believe we're out of time. Will you come back and we'll do this again? I'd love it.
Oh, my God. Anytime. Yes, please. I love it. I'm so glad we don't have to wait until we're
online.
In person again.
I know. Isn't that nice?
Yes.
Where can people find you online, find out what you're doing?
Oh, sorry. Yes, I am on all social media channels at Naomi W. Grossman. TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, you name it. And, of course, my website is just naomigrossman.net.
Awesome. Go and find that stuff, people, and do check out on Hulu the new American Horror Stories, because Naomi is fantastic in one of the episodes, and it's always a joy to have you here and to get to share a little laugh with you and some creativity. I think you're fantastic, my friend, and it's a joy to have you with me. If you missed those links, you can find me at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com for everything I'm doing in the entertainment and the spiritual world. I am there for you. Also, Haunted Playground is the show, live.com, hauntedplayground.com, liveparanormal.com is the radio network. And tonight I'll be doing a little psychic broadcast on Live Paranormal's video network, which is facebook.com/TheLiveParanormal. Please look for me there and on all social media platforms at Sheena Metal. Till I see you next time, seek peace. Live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity, and always raise your vibration. Have some fun. Get out there. There are no accidents. And enjoy the things that go bump in the night. I'll see you next time. I love you all.